So I thought it might be helpful for you to hear a little bit about my own journey with this theme of client acquisition. So today's topic is going to be from fumbling to flourishing, my journey with client acquisition. And I'm going to share with you a little bit of my story with my own business about how I started to pay attention to this strategy and really now how this strategy has really helped my business grow in so many ways. So if we've never met before, my name is Maya Haridet. I'm a business coach and speaker, and I help entrepreneurs uncover what they don't know that they don't know about running successful businesses. And this topic of client acquisition, listen, it is such an underrated conversation for entrepreneurs. I think we all are adjusted to hearing the hot and sexy topics like digital marketing or social media or SEO or, all of the things that allow you to scale a business. But if you think about how large companies, especially a number of large companies in certain industries, of how they made their money years ago, and to be frank, how they still make their money now, a lot of it doesn't happen on the interwebs. It happens in person, and it happens from, palm to palm, flesh to flesh types of conversations. And if you've never really sat down and unpacked how this could serve your business, right, and how it probably already shows up in your business, but are you really leveraging it to the best of its ability? Are you really getting the type of ideal clients you want on a consistent basis? Then I hope that you'll, buckle up and listen into my story as I share three critical points that happened in my own business that I started being able to kind of identify certain strategies that I was using and also really start to, understand where I had gaps and where I had areas that kind of needed some support and additional next steps. So I'll start out where my business first started. I started my business a number of years after working for a few companies in the entrepreneurship education startup space. And listen, I feel really privileged because I worked with a lot of these pioneers back when nobody understood what entrepreneurship was, and especially why you needed to be educating young people about starting a business. Like, that just seems crazy. Aren't they supposed to be focusing on their ABCs? So I do feel blessed that I got to watch firsthand because these businesses were startups, they were scrappy, they were, just trying to make magic happen. I got to watch a lot of people in this industry who were in charge of finding the clients who wanted services for their programs, for their schools. We did conferences as well, which is a really big thing. And I got to watch firsthand business development happen in front of my face, working for these companies. So I was hired initially to work with the companies to just run the program. So, like, managing all of the details behind the scenes. I guess you could say I was kind of today's version of a director of operations, right? And so I've always had to take care of the bells and whistles. Well, part of that was me going out and going on these visits where, the vice president or whoever the key decision maker was for the company that I was with, they would be meeting with the person across the table that had the budget, that had the money, that needed the project to be delivered. And so I watched, oh, I don't know, countless hours of these types of conversations where it's the small talk conversations, where we're going to the event and, we're going to be passing out flyers and, talking to people and collecting cards. The different events where it's, fundraising type of opportunities. There were so many ways that I got to watch the conversations happen, and which would then lead to these, large scale contracts that then I was there on the ground, working and providing income for both myself and for a number of other people that would work on these contracts. So I don't think though anyone ever told me what it was that we were doing, if I can be honest about it. So I think the first phase of my business, if you would have come and told me that what I was doing at that time was client acquisition, that I was doing business development, I would have looked at you and been like, what is that? Right? Like, I know we go to this meeting, once a month, and there's these decision makers that are here, or I probably wouldn't even use the term decision makers. I would have just said that they're, these representatives from these companies, that we get to connect with and have coffee with afterwards. But I didn't even know the concept existed. I just knew that the way that the companies that I worked for, the places that I subcontracted with, they would just have these ongoing relationship building moments. And from those relationships, they were then able to get contracts signed. And then, my job was to execute on whatever the details of those contracts were. I know that if I'd probably gone to B school or probably, walked another career path, I might have then come across this concept and what the term was. in its own way, I'm kind of glad I didn't, because it allowed me then, when I started my own business, to fumble and try to duplicate what I had seen others do. And listen, fumble I did. And in some ways, I was actually really good with the business development part of my business, right? I knew already some of the industry events to go to. You know, I'm not a shy person by nature. I don't mind networking. I'm not a big networker, but I don't mind networking and talking with people. But I don't know if I knew a lot of the nuances behind some of the things that I do now, like around the follow-up piece, right? I definitely didn't understand at that time how to break down who the decision makers were. And to be frank, at that time, I don't know if there were as many people that needed to be involved sometimes in agreeing to do certain things. So I've since learned, you know, you've got to get the decision makers that you're talking to. And sometimes there's people behind the scenes that also are going to rank very heavily on whether something is going to, you know, go or no go. And you need to have a relationship with them. But I fumbled my way through, and I was building a business, y'all, based upon just landing a few couple of contracts here and there. I got really, really good at client retention. That was always my focus. And, you know, that fits, I think, with my operations focused background, which was making sure that, you know, every I is dotted and every T is crossed. And, you know, when you serve clients like that, I think they appreciate that. They value that. It allows them to trust you. It allows them to bring you back year after year. So I really built my business in those first couple of years, probably the first 10, if I'm honest about it, really through a lot of long-term client retention. Referrals was a big part of the work that I did. And then just showing up, kicking off some initial types of activities to help me get some initial clients, you know, in the door, you know. And back then, you know, ways of how you could kind of connect and engage look different than now, the options we have on the internet. So some of the job boards or the bulletin boards that I might have mentioned, you know, back then, they don't exist anymore. Or I remember in my area, New York City, there was this great newspaper that used to always give a lot of really cool business opportunities. I actually found a few just scrolling through the classified business opportunities, right? But those things don't exist in that way anymore. But I would say in the beginning, I had no idea what it was. I had no idea what I was doing, how I was doing it, but somehow or another, I just fumbled into it. I can see another specific pivot point in my business around 08. And truth be told, it happened before 08. 08, if you remember, was the time frame when a lot of the banks were running into major financial problems. And that had a ripple effect for everyone in every market. I think some of that, though, was starting to happen 05, 06, with the rise of people having their own websites and their own access to e-commerce and this whole digital marketing craze, you know, for lack of a better word, coming on board. And look, I did my darndest to try to show up at the conferences, the events, to kind of learn, like, how do I do digital marketing? Like, if this is where everyone is, like, what do I do? How do I get my name out there? How do I become visible? And I struggled with it. I really, really struggled with it. I couldn't understand how it worked. There were a number of times that I actually thought it would be a liability because of a lot of the work that I used to do, and I still do somewhat for clients. I can't talk about some of the things that I do. And I always struggled with, well, how do I put that information out there, right? And so I think that second phase in my business around 08, there definitely was that theme of confusion, but it was confusion because the market was shifting in general, and how we did marketing as a country, really as a planet, was changing. And those early foundations around you having a website and you, you know, having a digital marketing strategy, content marketing, for example, blogging, you know, all of these different things, you know, video came later on, but all of these forms of communicating just seemed odd to me. Now, I did have some wins, though. There is one win in particular that I do look back on pretty fondly. The platform formerly known as Twitter, I actually had a really good friend who was really, really good at Twitter and kind of shared with me some strategies about building up my presence on Twitter. And Twitter was fun for me because Twitter tapped into that more, I like to educate and be educated. So that part of my personality is always, I love to learn, right? So Twitter was just really fun to share articles and like learn about other articles and talk to people back and forth via that way. And one of the strategies that I found very effective, and it worked really, really well with my concept of making sure that I'm building long-term relationships, is I would meet people on Twitter, right? Like we would all find an event that we would attend, we would have a conversation back and forth, and then we would find ways to meet up in real life. So one of the things that I remember doing back around that time was if there was a conference going on and they gave out the Twitter hashtag of where, you know, for the conference, I would actually start tweeting using that hashtag and talking to other people so that then when I got to the conference, it was actually a game changer because there were a number of times I would get to conferences and I would know people. Well, I mean, I didn't know them, right? But you would have this relationship built with perfect strangers before you got there. And I think it changed the game, right? Like it really, really made it so much easier to kind of just roll into the fun parts of the conference versus the awkward, like, hi, my name is Maya. It's nice to meet you. Who are you? And you're just trying to kind of get to know each other, you know? So I do think at that time, even strategies like that were showing up. There was one consistent strategy though that I can give you during that time that I was definitely doing. And that strategy was making sure that I volunteered at different associations and that I was showing up where I knew people within the industry were showing up. And let me break down what I mean by that. I think for a lot of people, there is an understanding that you, when you have a service-based business, you've got to go to networking events, right? You want to go to networking events because you want to meet other people in your field, right? You want to meet other service providers that do what you do. You also want to meet prospective clients. Like, let's keep it real. That's why most businesses go to those events is you're like, hey, can I meet a client that's going to be interested in hiring me? Well, I always found networking hard if I just went to an event that I didn't have something to do. But if I had an event where I had something to do, so I would volunteer sometimes for events, not even because I wanted to volunteer, but I knew that by volunteering, I would get to meet the people behind the scenes. I would get to meet some of the speakers sometimes before they went on, or just kind of have a different viewpoint of the event and who the movers and shakers were that would allow me to kind of be seen in a different way than if I was just a regular registrant, you know, in the audience amongst a sea of faces. And so while I don't think I would have called that client acquisition back then, I do think that I was aware that that was going on. And I know that I met a number of people that way and actually found a number of clients by doing that. There wasn't a plan. Yeah, it was kind of throwing some spaghetti up against the wall and hoping that it stuck when I did that, but it worked, right? And it was something that helped me not only sustain the business, but grow the business a number of times because when you were in the right networks, people would get to know you and then it would be a really, really easy referral for them to say, hey, oh, you need to check out Maya. Oh, yeah. I met her doing this and this is what her strength is. Like, because if you volunteer an event, people get to know what your strengths are. They get to know who you are. And then when they make the referral is totally different than when you're going in there cold and you've got to kind of impress them. You know, and two, I didn't, you know, it took me a while to get a pretty decent, you know, digital marketing strategy and a really good website. I always had a decent LinkedIn, but it took me a while to kind of make sure some of those assets would look really good. So if someone were to try to find me online, you'd find a few things here and there. But I do think those referrals, you know, and me making sure that people that would refer me had something good to be able to share about me, those definitely helped me get in the door and find ways to be able to make sure I could build my clients and kind of keep clients coming in. So this leaves us with my third and final stage of my business, my current stage of my business, and how I approach client acquisition. I'm super happy to say that now I do know that I'm using a client acquisition strategy and am very intentional around what it looks like because I know that this is the key to both my business continuing to stay visible, to staying relevant to what clients are looking for, and also a way to be able to navigate things when business gets busy, right? Because it's very easy to have happen where if you're in my world, for example, during event season, like there's an event going on, two or three events going on every week, and it becomes really easy to forget about looking for future clients during that time. But I found a number of things now during this current stage that have helped me to make sure that I both retain clients for the long term. I'm a big believer in long-term client retention, but also to look for new clients everywhere I go and finding ways to kind of approach that conversation in a way that feels authentic. It doesn't feel cumbersome. It doesn't feel like, oh my gosh, I have to do my client acquisition strategy. It's pretty natural and it's pretty organic for me to be able to do. So I will preface this by saying that I think the current stage of my business that I'm in right now, one of the other keys that stands out is that I really made the decision at this point that I'm going to go all in with this business. And I think that commitment and that willingness to do a lot of things that I knew were going to be uncomfortable around branding, around marketing, around sales. I think that that also has helped a lot when it comes to this conversation of client acquisition. So I do want to preface it. If you do have any doubts whatsoever right now in your journey, if you're not quite sure, if you're still on the fence, if you should go back to work, you know, and get a job, if you're thinking like this is just a cute side hustle, some of these techniques may not get you the results that you want. And a large part of it is what is your goal? What do you want out of it? And I'm here to tell you, you don't have to sacrifice your life to do it. I'm not about, you know, being overwhelmed and hustle, hustle, hustle. But that commitment, there's something different that will shift. There's something that will happen in your business if you have that commitment. And I think that is probably one of the first steps I would recommend you take when it comes to client acquisition, is really to commit to say, I really, really want to do this. I'm willing to do the uncomfortable parts of the work. I'm willing to see this through so that I can get to the other side where I have clients that are continually reaching out to me saying that they want to work with me. So there are a couple of things that I think stand out in this third phase. And at this point in my business, I still do a lot of work B2B. I have clients that I'll work with contracts over the course of a couple of months, or even something like I'm going to do soon. I'm going to do a training, a 2-hour training for the client. But I've been involved behind the scenes for probably 3, 4, 5 hours actually in preparing the type of deck we're going to work with, going over the content, you know, making sure it aligns with the goals and who we think the participants are. So, you know, it's a really involved process that I have where my B2B clients have to trust me and we have to have a good relationship behind the scenes. So I'll give you the first strategy that was probably the biggest game changer of all. And it's something that costs you $0, but you've got to be intentional around it. It's the follow-up, y'all. I really struggled with the follow-up in my earlier years in the business because, you know, by nature, I'm not really a spreadsheets girl. I mean, yes, I do. I have a lot of the work that I've done with clients has been very operations based, and people always have complimented me on my skills for keeping things organized. But I'm also pretty crystal clear that I'm not by nature a spreadsheet girl. I am not that type A personality that's going to track every single thing that was said and done and things of that nature. That's just not how I operate. But I did find that during this time, and let's say that this time period, my third phase, let's say it started around 2013, 2014, I started coming across a number of different technology tools that changed the game for me around the follow-up. So the simple one that I use right now, I've done a number of different systems that were CRMs. I've done a number of systems that are email management and, you know, helping you kind of track who you're reaching out to and things of that nature. But the simple one that I have right now that anybody can get started with is that when I speak to a prospective client now, when I have a conversation with someone where this person has identified themselves as a potential client, whether it is for speaking, whether it's for coaching, whether we're even still trying to figure out what that thing looks like, right? Because, you know, sometimes that's part of what those conversations look like. I both track them in a Google Sheet. And yes, I do a Google Sheet very intentionally because it's quick and easy and I can access it when I'm on the road pretty simply. And then I also make sure that I have a distinct time to follow up with that person and clarity on what I'm going to follow up with them on. I have found again and again and again by creating just a very basic follow-up strategy like the one that I gave you, that's the game changer, y'all. Because here's what happens. We go to an event, we meet someone, and let's not even put them in the client category right now. Let's put them in the partnership category. You meet someone, you have a great conversation. You might even go out and have a coffee afterwards or catch up with them on a Zoom meeting afterwards and say, hey, looks like we could do some business together. Let's make this happen. You have a great conversation. And then 3 years goes by. Did you update them on things that you did? Did you think about them when someone asked you to take on a project and you knew you needed to outsource like part of that work? Did you see where they needed help, for example? Or, you know, it could be something simple like a social media contest that they're doing and they need someone to just say, like my page type of thing. That piece right there, right? Like all the 600 scenarios that happen after you meet someone. And in this case, I'm not even using a prospective client. I'm just saying someone who could be a partner for you, right? And partners, by the way, partners refer business. I've had a number of people that we do similar types of things. And it could be something as simple as like, hey, I can't do it on this date. Can you do it? I'll toss the work over to you type of thing. You've got to be intentional around the follow-up. And trust me, I get it. The those opportunities typically come in, or those conversations typically come in when you're your busiest, right? Like when we don't have a whole lot of work going on with our business, then it's easy to keep track of those things. Like I get that. The challenge is when stuff starts getting busy and you're getting stuff flying from like 60 different directions. And so that's why I found, like, I tried, you know, two CRMs at one point, and there was this really good email software that I was using for follow-ups. I just found it to be too cumbersome personally. I do know that at another stage of my business, right, when I do finally get to that next level, I probably will go back to using some of those systems. But for right now, you know, with the small team that I have, with the way that I'm doing client acquisition, the number of projects that I want to work on, it works the way that I have it. So I'm going to really, really encourage you, if you have not taken your follow-up game very seriously, take it serious. And then in this third and final stage, I'll tell you the real game changer. The real game changer has been holding myself accountable to certain metrics in the business. So when I toss out the idea of client acquisition, or, you know, when I first started talking about sales plans in my business, people's eyes would glaze over, and they still do, right? And my eyes glaze over because I don't really want to spend time getting clients, if I'm honest with you. I'd really rather spend time doing the work, right? Like I love, nothing is more fun to me than to be in a group of, you know, women entrepreneurs or people of color entrepreneurs, and we're diving in on how do we grow our businesses, right? And people are asking tough questions, and we're crowdsourcing answers, or I'm providing advice. Like that is my sweet spot. That's my jam, y'all. Like I could do that all day, every day. I don't want to go find the clients to pay me to do that work. I just want to do the work. But I will tell you a interesting secret that I figured out a while back, and it really was during this phase. If you base your results on the money you make, especially if you're not wired around money, like, yeah, we need money to pay our bills. We need money to kind of take care of our responsibilities. But if you're not wired around money, where money becomes the thing that you need to get, you're going to earn a certain amount in your business, and then you're going to get really lazy. And then when somebody comes across with an idea like metrics and numbers and tracking and KPIs and goal setting, you're just going to go into like a total daze. However, if you get crystal clear about why this business matters to you, why it matters to you more than the money, right? And so there's a number of ways you can do that. You can, you know, dive in deep on your vision statement. You can go and watch the TED Talk by Simon Sinek on why great leaders lead, and kind of figure out what is your why, right? Like he gives some examples in that video, which I think are very powerful. And you need to figure out, well, what's your why? What gets you motivated? What gets you excited? What makes you, you know, really over the top jazz, which for the record is going to help you with your marketing as well too. I found that when I got more clear and honest about my why, and when I got really, really grounded in it, it made that part around setting metrics and goals so much easier. It did. It changed the whole game. And so now every month I have a goal around what do I need to do in terms of prospecting, like the number of new people that I need to speak to, the number of follow-ups that I need to speak to. And then there's always a very specific sales goal that I set. You know, for the past couple of months in my business, it's really been focused on the number of proposals that I get out. You know, how many places know that they can work with my company, and the way I know that they're really interested is that they want a proposal. They want me to kind of work on something that will get them, you know, moving forward, you know, with the next steps in terms of saying like, hey, let's really see what we're going to do here together. And some of those proposals are, you know, RFPs where they're open to the general public. And some of them are internal where somebody has requested for me to send something to them. And we've kind of fleshed out some of those specifics. But I will say the setting the metrics and setting the goals, that's where the rubber meets the road, right? If you're not willing to step back and look at the numbers around your business and do a hardcore look at the numbers around your business, then when you tackle something like client acquisition, you're going to do it for a week, maybe 2 weeks at the most, and you're just going to drop off. But if you get really clear for yourself, if you really dig into that why piece, if you're really crystal clear when you wake up in the morning about why you're motivated to do this, and what does that impact for your clients, right? So for example, I'll give you part of my own why just to illustrate this point right now. One of the things that matters most to me is the piece around building legacy in my business, right? This business for me is not just about, you know, that I make some money. That's great. But, you know, when I cross over to the other side, what is the legacy that this business will have left behind? You know, did I improve the lives of women entrepreneurs? Did I improve the lives of Black women entrepreneurs and women of color entrepreneurs, where they started bringing in consistent capital and then now started making changes in their community because they had more money? Like that, when I really sit back and I really get clear about that and I really get honest about that for myself, that's everything to me. Because that's one of the challenges that I see right now, is that I see a lot of groups underestimated, that they can't get involved in their local politics. They can't get involved in their local school groups. They can't reinvest back in their business because they just don't have enough money coming in. That's just, you know, it's just really the reality of what they're dealing with. And when you have a business that produces the income that allows you to do those things, you approach life differently. You show up in these spaces and places differently. And I want to make that impact. I want to be able to look back over my life and point to a number of individuals that have been able to do that because they worked with me, because they use some of the tools and the strategies that I've been sharing with them. And so when I get really grounded in that, and I get like excited about that idea, then when I have to go make the phone calls, then when I have to go put out the content on social media or think about what's the next blog post that I'm then going to market 300,000 times in 60 different ways, right? Because that's really what you've got to do a lot of times, is, you know, multiple touch points. It doesn't get as hard, right? I remember when I first started posting about me speaking, you know, people had been telling me for years, Maya, after you speak, you should post that on social media. You should tell people. And I'd be like, that is the most braggadocious, you know, pompous thing you could ever do. I still think that, actually. I still think it is very pompous and very braggadocious, but I see it differently now, because if I'm going to make that impact and impact those women that I want to impact in the way that I'm doing, people have to see me doing the work. They have to see me on the court and see me playing the game. And I've spoken for years in a host of places and had events and things like that. I just never promoted it. I never talked about it. But I found that since I have started promoting that more and being much more confident about it, much more vocal about sharing that, that overall bigger picture vision that I'm really going after, well, guess what? More opportunities have just started coming to me because people understand my brand. They understand what I'm able to offer clients, because, you know, in the speaking world, if you don't keep getting opportunities sent to you, then you're not a good presenter. You're not a good speaker. But I keep getting a lot of opportunities sent to me, right? You know, I could probably do more, but, you know, I definitely am a, you know, want to be present in my daughter's life. So I don't want to be traveling all the time. There's that part of it completely. But I'm proud of what I've done. I'm super proud of being able to make the impact with every single presentation that I've been able to deliver. So now when I think about the metrics that I need to set in my business, right? How many prospects do I need to reach each month? What are my sales goals for this quarter? And then what are the action steps I need to take around sales? Then when I start getting into, well, how am I going to acquire these clients? What are the actual steps that I need to take? The work becomes so much easier. So, you know, take it from someone who's not a big numbers person. You need metrics and goals in your business. But probably the best way you're going to get those metrics and goals around clients and acquiring clients is getting so tapped into your why, so tapped into your vision statement, that you are really a force of nature. You're just going to tell everybody, and every place you go is going to know that's what your work is about. That's what you're here for. And it just makes it easier, to be honest, than to acquire clients, because people know what you stand for. They know why they would want to work with you, and it makes that sales process a lot easier. So I'll be the first to say that client acquisition will probably continue to be a journey in my business as I move forward. And, you know, thank goodness we have more technology nowadays to support us in these goals. You know, I remember a couple years before the pandemic, or maybe it was like a year before the pandemic, I went to a networking event and we were also like amped that LinkedIn had a QR code and we could hover our phones over each other and like all of a sudden just connect with each other on LinkedIn. You didn't have to go through the, hey, I'll connect with you when I get home, and then like never connect with the person. You could just now put your phone on top of their phone and boof, you know, you were now connected via LinkedIn. But then after you connected via LinkedIn, did you talk to that person? Did you connect with that person, right? Like, so I think there's going to, you know, really be a need for us to stay abreast of the technology and the tools. But the overall principles of client acquisition, look, there's a couple of things that I can tell you over my years of business that, you know, I'll say with a little bit of certainty. I don't want to say with complete certainty, as I don't have a crystal ball, that I can say over the years have been very important. The first one is long-term relationships matter. This client acquisition is really about the long-term game, y'all. If you're doing this thing for just a short, quick, you know, hit of like money for this month, $100 for this month, $1,000 for this month, you're really missing it. Your goal is to build clients for the long term. Number two, lean into your strengths, right? I've never been good at the short-term marketing. I'm getting better at it and I'm proud of myself about that, but I'm really, really good at the long-term. I'm a marathoner when it comes to this thing. Like I will keep showing up and keep showing up and keep presenting and keep commenting until we make that connection happen. And that works for me. I recommend you just lean into your strengths around client acquisition. That's everything. If you just tap into what you do and what you do well. And then the third part is being open to doing it badly, but showing up to do it. And I give that very, very intentionally because during those first years in my business, I didn't know what client acquisition was. I don't even know if the word existed back then. Maybe it did. Business development definitely was around, but I didn't know that's what I was doing. I had no idea that every time that I was volunteering, you know, with an association and yeah, I was showing up for every meeting and yeah, I'm the one that is going to roll up sleeves and put the tables away and things of that nature. I have no problems with doing that type of work. I had no idea that that was then going to lead me into building these long-term relationships and these networks that have made my client acquisition strategy much easier. So do it messy, right? Do it at whatever stage that you have, because as you do it over time, you're going to see the patterns. You're going to see where you did it really well and where you have to learn versus just trying to keep taking notes on, well, what do I do? What do I do? Just lean in and start and do it messy. Okay. And so I hope that my story and, you know, my fobbles and my fumbles and, you know, the mistakes that I've made have really helped you and given you some ideas, and I'm wishing you all the best on your client acquisition journey yourself. Take care.